to immediately move for an emergency sleeping area where homeless people could go to sleep without this kind of lethal intimidation happening. And of course, Fitzmaurice has not responded, nor have any of the other council members. But I would encourage you, if you want this kind of terror, well, to end this terror is a much bigger number, but to give people some kind of sanctuary during this period of time, I think is vital. I encourage you to call 420-5020 and leave a message for the council member of your choice, or for the entire city council if you wish, demanding action on this issue. And that's just a nasty note from Chris Crone to Police Chief Belcher, which is what Crone did, and I suppose is better than nothing. But indeed, in response, Belcher apparently wrote a letter, or there was an announcement into the Sentinel that the police were looking for suspects, and they gave drawings of them on page 3 or page 4. And that's good. I mean, that's certainly more attention, more police work than has been done before. But of course, the ultimate issue of protecting people while this is going on is completely ignored. And the key vote on this is Catherine Sleeping Baron Byers, and she's the one that all you timid liberals out there, and all you hardcore radicals, and all you folks who just think that homeless people should not be arrested for sleeping at night if they have no other legal place to go, should call up. And her number is 420-5020. Again, 420-5020. That's the City Council hotline. And I would encourage you that if you do call up, also leave a message on the Huff line that you did. I'd like to know who called or how many people called. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Tell the mayor that you're just tired of these beatings, you're tired of the shootings, you're tired of the city council ignoring the issue of the right of homeless people to sleep safely at night without being multiply targeted by police and by trailbusters. It's pretty serious stuff. Well, we may have an extended show today if the little red hen doesn't come in with her chicks. So that's a talk show host who usually follows me. He's usually here by this time, and I got a kind of a suggestion from an earlier broadcaster who was in the studio that she might not be in until later, might not even be in at all today. And if that's the case, hey, I'm going to steal the time and roll forward with more tapes, more music, and hopefully more phone calls from you here on this edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. And who is Bathrobes Pierre? Well, easily noted. I am Bathrobes Pierre. Bathrobe, of course, for the robe that I was accused of losing when I was up in San Francisco. Everyone was asking, where is your bathrobe? And I said, well, what do you think? It's in my bedroom. Am I crazy? Well, the truth is I haul out the bathrobe in order to dramatize the importance of homeless people having the right to sleep at night and how idiotic it is to arrest people for sleeping. That's what the bathrobe is. And Bathrobes Pierre is the kind of nom de radio that I use. Robespierre was a figure in the French Revolution who demanded rights for the people, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm encouraging you to do the same thing. We should all do the same thing. And hopefully more of us will. But, of course, while we're demanding rights, we should always take time out for a breather. And here's a song from the 80s from Mark Levy, one of our local political satirists. It's called Waldheimer's Disease, and it is about our former UN Security Council or General Assembly President. What was his name? He was the Secretary General of the United Nations, and it had been shown that he was a Nazi. And his response to that was that he didn't remember. He had a case of Waldheimer's disease. And let's hear how Mark addresses that. Whoops! Before we do, looks like we got an incoming phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Well, Robert Norris, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Oh, this sounds like the man behind the rent control initiative. The rent stabilization advisory initiative.
I wanted to talk about a comment that you just made. Now, does advocating rights for the people include disrupting public meetings and pawing public officials?
Well, this is, of course, a subject we've talked about at length in the past. I would say it depends on what kind of process or so-called process is actually in place, and what the public crisis is that's being ignored by the institutions in power.
So you can stoop to whatever level, including the level that you claim to be against, in the name of what?
Well, now you know,
self-righteousness.
Well, you know, in the name of, let me put it this way, I don't believe in stooping. I believe in rising rather than stooping.
Rising to disrupting public meetings, rising to pieing public officials.
Well, I don't
call that rising.
Well, I think pieing, for example, is not really a disruption at all. It's a form of exposing, in the case of Willie Brown, his vicious anti-homeless policies, his pompous horseshit, and his tendency to, he was kicking off, as we heard before, if you've been listening to the show, a clean up the city campaign. But much of his clean up the San Francisco campaign has involved massive and ongoing violation of the civil rights of homeless people.
There, I should put this out bluntly, in my opinion, there is no justification for pieing a public official, Mr. North.
We disagree on that.
There is no justification in America, in Santa Cruz, in 1999 for disrupting a public meeting.
Mm-hmm.
This is the tactic of a punk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, this is the tactics that punks, that you and I probably would agree are punks, utilize.
It depends on what is and isn't being discussed at public meetings, and it depends on what you mean by disruption. I think we have to be very, very specific here.
I think it's very, very easy to determine disrupting a public meeting when you rant and when you chain yourself to the balustrade, when the public meeting cannot continue because of your presence. It's clear that you're disrupting a public meeting. When you pie a public official, when you put a pie in someone's a public official's face, it is an outrageous assault act.
Mm-hmm.
And it should not go unnoticed or unpunished if we do not take action against that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
We have succumbed to a very, very despicable form of anarchy. And I'm sorry.
Well,
the system
think
that we have is mm-hmm. probably about as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Checks and balances, due process, you got the right to petition for a redress of grievances. You're not guaranteed success.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope we can get a better system, and I think that probably there's some callers out there who may have some
thoughts. You know,
all
the people that I know, and that I think you know a lot of them too, we know in common, there are the belligerentsters of Santa Cruz, the vanguard of idealism, right? With their disrupting public meetings and justifying pieing public officials, that shows exactly where they're at. You put them in control and you end up with Mao. You end up with the Cultural Revolution. You end up with the inability to even petition for redress, because that's where it leads.
Well, I'm not aware that pieing leads to Mao, actually.
I find myself amazed, literally amazed, Robert, that you would justify such crude behavior,
mm-hmm.
disrupting public meetings. By anyone that in my opinion would claim to be an activist cannot be justified.
Mm-hmm.
Pieing public official is an outrageous act.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no justification.
I think the violation.
I don't care what the issue is.
I think. Well, I do. I care. I think the violation of people's civil liberties is a much more serious violation than a pie in the face of a pompous public official. I'm sorry, Bob.
All it does is work against what you claim to be about. It is discrediting to the max.
Well, you know, I'm not much of a...
You might not be willing to hear that from me or anybody else.
I've heard it. I mean, I think I know it's a point of view you have, and you've expressed it in the past.
I find myself, as I will repeat, amazed that activists, they call themselves activists at least, will justify such tactics as disrupting public meetings in Santa Cruz in 1999.
Well,
they will justify such tactics as...
Well, Bob, I think you're repeating yourself now.
With such audacity,
Bob,
as to call it an act of comedy.
Bob, you're
I'm repeating
you
myself.
You are repeating yourself.
Because it doesn't seem to be getting through, Mr. Norris. By calling pieing a public official an act of comedy is the ultimate insanity. It's what corruption does to deny its own actions.
You know, I wish you were...
How outrageous can you get?
Well,
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't be sorry. You have a right to your view, Bob. And I think, as I said, I think the act of pieing someone can be a very effective thing and has been very effective. It essentially exposes the kinds of pomposity and hypocrisy that goes on.
What it does,
and in terms, let me finish. I'll let you speak. Let me finish my sentence. It allows, given our really corrupt media system, it allows the 30-second TV bite or sound bite to get really give the larger public a sense of satisfaction that this pompous politician, without any real injury, got his comeuppance briefly.
Oh, without any real injury.
Yeah, without any real injury.
Pompous and the corrupt media system. And you know what that kind of activity does, really?
I mean, he's not getting shot. You know, he's not getting knifed.
In practice, what it does is it distances anyone with any credibility from aligning themselves with the
issue that you claim to be about.
I don't agree with that.
This is, in essence, the problem with the tactics that you are espousing.
I know you believe that.
It's not a question of believing it necessarily. It's really a question of what is the practical reality.
Well, I know you believe that is the practical reality.
One last time and get off the air and forgive
her. Well, before you get off the air, Bob, let me point out that you're working on your own road for some very important changes in terms of rent stabilization. And before you go, I'd love to have you give a number of people can call if they want to help with that effort.
I'll do that.
Go ahead.
So what I will say is that we have the right to petition for a redress of grievances. You're not guaranteed success. And when you go down the route of disrupting public meetings, pying public officials, it's a disaster. And it's a disgrace. And it needs to be said.
Well, you certainly have said it. Now, give us some tips on how to help with the rent stabilization initiative.
If you want to gather signatures for rent stabilization, if you're a Santa Cruz City resident voter, you can call 457-2670.
457-2670 if you want to help with this initiative, which, what, has 6 months to get on the ballot?
November 5th.
Okay, Bob, we'll keep up the good work, and we'll see if you get some, you stir up some controversy here. Maybe we'll hear some other thoughts.
Not a question of wanting to stir up controversy other than making the political scenario here in Santa Cruz realistic and sincere. Otherwise, nothing is going to be done other than blocking. And I, for whatever it's worth, Robert, can identify with those that will block, because the credibility is shot when you align yourself with such activity. You can't.
Well, I thank you, Bob.
The fact that you can't see that, I think, really speaks volumes. And I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're entitled to your view. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
And this is Pies R Us Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Actually, I don't think we have had enough pieing here in Santa Cruz. Actually, the mere sight of a pie drives the police into paroxysms of frenzy. I brought a pie to a city council meeting about 2 months ago. There was actually a pieing was planned by an unknown person of another unknown person, and we'll be discussing that if and when it ever happens. And not a criminal event, by the way. It would have been a non-criminal event. And the police were lining up, I think there were six of them outside. They were along the wall. They wanted a ringside seat. And who doesn't want to see the Three Stooges in action? And you might say it's undignified, but in a way, I am much more concerned with the fact that people are getting beaten outside, and people like Catherine Byers and Tim Fitzmaurice, indeed even Chris Crone and Keith Sugar, who have done nothing to introduce any prophylactic measures, any measures that would stop this contagion from spreading further, this violence, have done anything. And I think that a pie in the face of one of these politicians would get you a headline that I think would trumpet the issue into the front pages of the Sentinel, and I think that's really what needs to be done, and would also give people a good laugh at the hypocrisy of our local politicians. So I do take issue with Bob. I know he feels very strongly about what his perspective is on that, and he works very hard through conventional channels, through political channels, to try to get change, and I for one wish him well and hope he succeeds. But I think there are many roads forward, and by no means is pieing violent behavior along the lines of the kinds of behavior that police use, for instance. Nor is using necessary force to stop a police arrest a form of violence in the same category either. So we do have differences of opinion on this, and I do draw those distinctions. You know, I mean, there are people who, you know, push for armed revolt and armed revolution. You know, our ancestors in the American Revolution are some of those. I suppose you can criticize that, and perhaps you should. I mean, there are some people who are deeply committed to nonviolence, even in the face of Hitlerian repression. And the question of whether that succeeds is really an important one that I've been kind of wrestling with all my life. The confrontation between Hitler and Gandhi, you know, what would have happened had Hitler taken over India? Interesting science fiction, alternate history has been written about that. Subjects worth talking about, subjects worth discussing. But it is important, as Gandhi, who was a nonviolence advocate, stated, that he said nonviolence is the road to travel when you are fighting oppression, but better than doing nothing is violence if you are fighting oppression. Fighting oppression is the key here. You know, the important thing is not to remain nonviolent under all circumstances. The important thing is to know what you are fighting when you are fighting it, and to continue to resist and to press for restoration and extension of the human rights that make us a community, a real community, or could make us a real community in the future. Anyway, that's my soapbox, my broadside, so to speak, and I have a broadside, I can tell you that, here on Bathrop Spears Broadsides at 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm not hearing anybody come in to discuss this issue on pieing. I'm going to turn to this tape, which I played it before on the show, but I enjoy it so much I'm going to play it again. Waldheimer's disease, about UN former UN Attorney General, Secretary General Kurt Waldheim, who was revealed to have been working in Yugoslavia, of all places, as an SS person, or was it Wehrmacht, during the Second World War, and just didn't mention it on his application to be a Secretary General.
Election campaigns can be serious business. Scandal and slander and smearing fair play. But your past need not haunt you when running for office. If you leave out a few years from your resume, and what will we do about Waldheim? Is he finally telling the truth? They say he did more than just sit through the war in those few Balkan years of his soldiering youth. If you weren't a Nazi, then why did you lie? Why did you lie? Oh, please tell us why. What facts are you hiding? We don't mean to pry. We want to believe you're not that kind of guy. I'm not a Volkan in so. I mean it sincerely, but I didn't know. I was told, when reporting for duty in Greece, that our mission would simply be keeping the peace. I just did my duty, a soldier's routine. I never killed nobody, my record's clean. Sure, I signed a few papers and wrote a few briefs, but that's nothing much to dwell on. I was taking a snooze when they came for the Jews, and when I woke up, they were gone, they were gone. There are some things one chooses to simply forget, and with time, all the angst disappears. The United Nations could not prove a thing, so they put me in charge for 10 years. If you weren't a Nazi, then why did you lie? Why did you lie? Oh, please tell us why. What facts are you hiding? We don't mean to pry. We want to believe you're not that kind of guy. So let's lift the glass to our Austrian president. He's learned his lesson quite well. If the public suspects you, deny it completely. And if they don't ask, never tell. If you weren't a Nazi, then why did you lie? Why did you lie? Oh, please tell us why. What facts are you hiding? We don't mean to pry. We want to believe you're not that kind of guy. Or is it just mud in your eye?
John, would you be interested, would you think a safe zone is a good idea for homeless people, like a campground?
Yes, definitely. This arrangement here of homeless shelter has one flaw, and it is flawed in that it is no place to see. A campground, an adequate campground with restroom facilities and a little bit of security in that group is the missing element that would make this event work. And even if it was just putting a top deck on this place, where places lay down and sleep, and a little shelter in the rain. Yeah, we were just allowing him to camp out here in the yard at night and be up at a certain when he'd gone at a certain time. It would eliminate the vulnerability as well as the hassle it is.
Well, that's where I'm hoping. I've been urging City Council to open up some kind of emergency zone. Cole, the head of the Homeless Services Center, said he can't handle it here because there's too much else going on. But City Council could set up a zone in a park. It could set up a zone in the Poganip. It could set up a, you know, open up.
There's a place just in right at the edge of the Poganip.
Bob's Pine Grove Campground?
Just in back of that. There's a flat spot there. That would be ideal. It would be ideal. It's easily accessible. A good place. And somewhere you have a bit of oversee. He's heading straight down the hill from Ranger Station.
Thank you. So we're up here in the campground area where John was that night. And you can't see bullet holes, but the place is pretty overgrown. And you said the bullets were coming about waist high here?
Yeah, about waist high.
And you say about 20 shots or so? Or?
They didn't have ammunition right out in this area, but they started shooting 20 rounds earlier, 100 yards down the road.
So they were coming up from Felton, I mean up from Santa Cruz toward Felton on Highway 9, and they seemed to just sort of spraying the bushes?
Correct, spraying with the sack that we're doing.
Do you think they knew there were people here?
Well, I'm sure they did. There wasn't anybody camped in this area.
But we are kind of in undergrowth. You can't really see camps right now.
I'll tell you a thing.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add to that? That's about it.
John tells us that last fall he also heard shots when he was camped across the road in another area. We're down here on Highway 9. Along the strip of land between the call box and about what? 200 yards up the road, 100 yards up the road.
Yeah. Not safe camping.
So if you want to, all you campers, stay away from the area. But it's hard to tell when these guys are going to strike next.
Yeah, call box.
Stay away from the call box. The police call box.
Hey, historic moment here in the Cinema 9 at 4:20, June 20th, 19th.
Yes, that was a historic moment, but we're going to actually wind the tape forward. In the past couple of months, we've been doing a lot of, putting a lot of focus on Yugoslavia and the bombing. And then when the bombing stopped, you know, it seemed we didn't talk too much about it. We haven't been talking too much about what's going on in Yugoslavia. Well, I think we should continue to discuss this, and I know it... It's kind of a little hard to shoehorn that in with homeless rights in Santa Cruz, except that, of course, people are being made homeless by the thousands in Yugoslavia. Now it's being Serbs, the Serbs' turn to get made homeless. Here's an interesting article I picked up off the internet, compliments of Shana Glek, a local activist who has spoken at numerous meetings and has also been to Yugoslavia. She was able to secure her children finally through the Yugoslavian people's intervention and help. Apparently her husband had run off to Yugoslavia with the kids and so forth, and she was able to get them back. And there's been some talk about the war criminal situation. The International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia has issued a warrant for Slobodan Milosevic, the Yugoslavian head of state, for some 370 odd killings, and kind of a small number of killings considering all the headlines we've seen about atrocities, but you know, that's a lot of killings. One wonders how many of the NATO officials are under indictment for their bombing mistakes and so forth, but I guess that's sort of a different category. Anyway, here's the first extended discussion of the International War Crimes Tribunal, which I think makes some telling points. I'm going to read it. The anomalies of the International Criminal Tribunal are legion. This is not victor's justice in former Yugoslavia. In fact, it is no justice at all. By John Laughland, The Times, London, June 18th. It's a couple days old from a London newspaper. The motion may be a spirited justice, but it is rarely its guarantor. The allegations of war crimes eagerly funneled out of Kosovo by the thousands of journalists in the province have provoked a demand for retribution. That cry for justice is natural. But the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, the body charged with pursuing those accused of war crimes in Kosovo, is a rogue court with rigged rules. The tribunal was established to override the key principle of the international order, the belief written into the UN Charter that states were sovereign within their own borders. State sovereignty, it was claimed, merely provided a cover for dictators to wield unfettered power, and therefore international authority must override it. It is a seductive argument, but one which may simply allow the, quote, international community to wield unfettered power instead. The International Criminal Tribunal shows little sign of caring that NATO has itself broken nearly every rule of war, or that the peace deal concluded with Belgrade is null and void in international law, since Yugoslavia's signature was obtained by force. Instead, it displays considerable contempt for the very thing which distinguishes the rule of law from retributive justice, namely, due process. One of the oldest principles of law is that a defendant may not be tried twice for the same crime. Dating from 15th century England and expressed in the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, this ancient rule is calmly brushed aside by Article 25 of the Tribunal's statute, which gives the prosecutor the right to appeal against an acquittal and obtain a conviction instead. Three such appeals have already been launched in cases the Tribunal is now trying. Another deep-rooted principle is that no man may be judge in his own cause. This does not apply to the Tribunal. During one trial, it was alleged that the tribunal itself was illegal because the United Nations Charter does not give the Security Council authority to create a body with supranational powers to prosecute individuals. Although it is a key requirement for due process that a defendant be tried by a body, quote, established by law, the Security Council is not a lawmaking body. Faced with the allegation that it had no legitimacy, the tribunal did not refer the matter to another body, such as the International Court of Justice, but instead decided to deal with the charge itself. Not surprisingly, it found in its own favor. Other anomalies are legion. The tribunal does not accord the right to bail or to a speedy trial. It does not have any definitions of the burden of proof required for a conviction, such as beyond reasonable doubt. It does not have juries. There is no independent appeal body. Rules against hearsay, deeply entrenched in common law, are not observed. And the prosecutor's office has even suggested not calling witnesses to give evidence, but only the tribunal's own, quote, war crimes investigators. This flouts the rule that a defendant must be able to confront his accusers and prepare a cross-examination of them. The tribunal gives itself powers as it goes along. Louise Arbour, the recently departed chief prosecutor, has said, "The law to me should be creative and used to make things right." And the tribunal dips into a potpourri of different legal systems from around the world. In one case, the tribunal defended itself against charges that it had illegally seized documents from the Bosnian government by saying that its procedures were compatible with the law in Paraguay. General Stroessner evidently has a place in the tribunal's judicial pantheon alongside Sir Edward Coke and William Blackstone. Stroessner is the dictator of Paraguay, or was. As if this were not enough, the tribunal is not funded by disinterested parties, but by those who waged or supported the attacks on Yugoslavia. These include the leading NATO governments, especially the United States, and various non-governmental organizations, like George Soros' Open Society Institute, whose head of office in Yugoslavia is a militant supporter of the Kosovo Liberation Army. Might, it seems, is always right. Just ask the NATO spokesman, Jamie Shea. On May 17th, he was asked whether NATO leaders could ever be indicted by the tribunal. "As you know," he replied, "without NATO countries, there would be no International Court of Justice, nor would there be any International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, because NATO countries are in the forefront of those who have established these two tribunals, who fund these tribunals, and who support on a daily basis their activities. This is not victor's justice. It is no justice at all." That's "The Anomalies of the International Criminal Tribunal Are Legion" by John Laughland. London Times, June 18th, a couple days ago. A very interesting article. Well, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, those of you who are still with us. Phone lines are open for those of you who wish to call in. And I'm now going to make a few belated announcements. I've made a few already. I've told you that on Tuesday at noon, you can talk to the Citizens Police Review Board member, Sandy Brown, at the Buttery. That's at North Brancaforte and Soquel Avenue, in case you don't know where that is. Then City Council, later on Tuesday the 22nd, meets at 3:30. There's the Homeless Task Force. There's going to be appointments to that body, or Homeless Task Farce, as I choose to call it, though I have to say, Christopher Crone's Crapper Commission, more respectfully known as the Commission for Public Restrooms, I believe, has indeed acted pretty quickly to put in some porta-potties and to get them funded as it did at the last city council meeting. So there are, thanks to that commission and the city council's action, more porta-potties going in downtown, 24-hour porta-potties, handicapped access porta-potties, in addition to the one that's currently in back of Logos Bookshop. And they're going to add to Logos Bookshop a sink so you can wash your hands. Boy, civilization is impinging here. What will Louis Rittenhouse say? Anyway, there's also going to be a porta potty out near the St. Francis Soup Kitchen slash day laborer lumberyard area. And that's, I think, very important. Again, they haven't dealt with the issue of sleeping and people in vehicles and defecation and urination that happens as a function of that. And I've suggested to Mark Farrell, Matt Farrell, who's, I think, staff or a member of this commission, that they put out porta-potties on Mission Street and Extension and Harvey West and certain other places where vehicles gather, but who knows, maybe they will get to that. So anyway, since Crone's Crapper Commission, named after Crone because he established it, is actually getting crappers in place, or at least porta-potties, who knows, maybe the task force will do something similar. But I'm suspicious because their mandate is not very, I guess they have a sort of a very scattered mandate. I'm not too optimistic about it. I don't have that mandate in front of me right now. I've read it, and I actually suggested that it just be limited to three things: finding legal places for people to sleep, re-establishing civil rights for homeless people in different areas, and articulating what services are inadequate. And if they simply stuck to those three things, I think they'd get somewhere, but I don't think they're going to, and I think they're going to be hobbled and crippled by conservative minority, if not majority, on the task force. It's going to be a 6 months journey to nowhere, as Byers and Scott were doing in 1996 as they supposedly looked around for a campground, and I just couldn't find anything at all. Well, people were being thrown out of the Coral Street open air shelter, or people were dying on the streets as a consequence, and as documented by Dan Hopkins, who later began a seven and a half month protest at City Hall, in the City Hall Sleepers Protest, 1996. On Wednesday the 23rd at 8:15 in Santa Cruz Municipal Court, that you, as you've heard from activist Jim Costner, Steve Argue, the activist accused of punching out an abusive police officer in the performance of his abuse, is going to be, I guess it's a discovery hearing, maybe it's a, not quite sure what kind of a hearing it is, but it is a public hearing around Steve Argue in the court system as he fights for his liberty. He's facing 4 years in prison. Wednesday the 23rd, 8:15 a.m., probably Department 5, but you might want to check it on the calendar. Then on Thursday the 24th at 5:30, the Homeless Services Center's board meeting is coming up. This is the board that controls the monopoly emergency shelter provider, the homeless service center for the day, and community house, a very, very fancy, well, comparatively expensive, limited program for 30 people who have sort of a drug-free transitional program that keeps them indoors and behind locked doors, I might add, and not engaging in any sexual hanky-panky. You're not allowed to have nighttime visitors in your room. it's another one of those programs, which I suppose has its good side and has its bad side. But this board covers all these homeless things, and they meet 5:30 at 115 Coral Street. Important to me is the fact that on their board sits our very own Sleeping Band Byers, Mayor of Santa Cruz, the one who kept the sleeping ban in place, and who has refused to put on the agenda an emergency campground, or an emergency safety zone, heck with a campground. And as she's done this, people are getting shot at, people are getting their faces beaten in, people are getting their ribs cracked, and Byers is off on another one of her trips out of town at the moment. She'll be back by Tuesday for the city council meeting, and then on Thursday on the 24th, she'll be at this board meeting, presumably. She has said that she will consider some kind of a resolution on the troll-busting situation at this meeting. It was brought up at the last meeting a month ago, but apparently not enough people had the shit beat out of them for her to take any immediate action, so she put it off for a month. Actually, the action that was taken this last month was meetings being thrown by Kim Cole, calling in the police officers who are supposed to protect homeless people, and we covered a little bit of that as Sergeants Baker, Sergeant Clark, and Officer Seeley, who has recently come under fire from several homeless people for abusive behavior, are supposed to be, you know, sympathetically taking complaints and also helping out folks with the troll buster investigations and showing people where and how to sleep. Reported the shooting by vigilantes above into homeless camping areas. He wasn't reporting any of this to the police because he has camping tickets and he doesn't want to get arrested for sleeping illegally. He's afraid of that. And that's a common fear. And not an unjustified one. The police have the choices in all these circumstances. And if you want to trust the police, then you can trust the police. And your trust may be vindicated. And then again, it may not. So that's always the question. So come to the Homeless Services Center board meeting and tell Catherine Byers it's time for her to stop putting the lives of homeless people in jeopardy for her own political purposes, because she's too timid to stand up for civil rights for homeless people. It's not that she doesn't believe in it. I believe she believes in it. She just lacks the political will. Well, if enough people stand up and demand it, maybe she will say to her conservative merchant critics, gosh, I'm sorry, but I had to give them a place to sleep because there was too much public pressure. That's 115 Coral Street, 5:30. Then at 7 o'clock on Club Cruise, Channel 71, on the 24th, if you get cable, you can tune in to a TV show which has Steve Argue and Tracy DeAngelo talking about the events we've talked about, the May 22nd protest at which police provoked violence and used violence. And then finally, on Monday the 28th, that's a week from this tomorrow, there will be a police review board meeting at which the board will have a chance to reverse its vote that there will be no independent investigation of the Argue case and of the events of May 22nd that affected so many people, not just Argue. Many others were impacted by all this police-provoked chaos. So, those are events coming up. If you have questions about them or you want to get more information, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Let's hear a little music and then continue down the road with yet more interviews. to Shoot My Producer. I don't know how that song got queued up, but we'll have to check it out. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. We should be talking about them winter's nights and them summer's nights rather than the days, because you can sleep during the day. That's legal. You just can't sleep at night if you're poor in Santa Cruz. Well, let's turn now to some more interviews on the street. These came from yesterday evening at on the street. You get some genuine people voicing some genuine grievances, and let's go into it.
So it's about 6:45. We're in front of the
Chapaya Atlan.
Kendall and Frank Little, meaning it's big.
Nobody really actually understands.
We do.
And we're talking to a man who had a problem with the police department.
I've been a hitchhiker for 24 years. I've been all over this country. And I'm getting sick of the police. Because all they want to do is mess with people that live on the streets. They say protect and serve. They throw you in jail. Don't give you back your gear. There's something wrong with the police.
This happened to you on Friday?
Yeah, it happened to me on Friday.
What happened? Where were you? What were the circumstances?
I was just drunk. I was minding my own business.
Right.
And they took me to jail, held me for 6 or 8 hours or whatever, and then they cut me loose. And they didn't have my gear at the jail.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go to try to get my gear. They even called up the police department, and they told me I can't get it until Monday.
And as a consequence, you had to buy another jacket?
Yeah, I had to buy another jacket just so I could stay warm. Because they got all my other gear.
Do you mind if we broadcast this on free radio?
I don't care.
Okay. And your first name is?
Stick it right in the fucking car and blow the fucker up.
Yes, we're actually standing near three squad cars here. They're all parked near to each other. Squad car 135, 128, and 159. And there's also, they've been driving past as well, keeping the neighborhood very well patrolled.
And I agree.
On this Saturday evening.
Right. And there ain't nobody bothering anybody. That's what gets me.
Yeah.
If anybody was bothering somebody, I could understand taking me to jail if I was bothering somebody.
So
but if I ain't bothering anybody,
where did they pick you up?
I don't remember.
So you were drunk.
I was drunk. Yeah.
And did they give you a receipt for your backpack?
Nope.
And you attempted. You went to the police department today and asked for some assistance to get back your backpack.
I got on the telephone and I asked them if I could get my gear, and they told me I got to wait until Monday.
Well, it sounds like it's their negligence in not filing it with your property, right?
Well,
at the jail.
I figure that if I go to jail, I don't care what it's for. If I did something wrong, or even if I'm drunk, it doesn't matter. But to protect and serve is what they're supposed to do. Now, they might have protected me, but they're not giving back what belongs to me. When I get released, you give me back what belongs to me. Yeah, I would hope that that's the way it was supposed to be, but it don't work that way.
Your first name is?
Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, tell the cops to go fuck themselves.
Your voice is going out of the airways even now, and perhaps they're getting the message.
But I don't try to be nobody. I ain't trying to be a bad boy or anything else, man. I just don't believe it. Most of these police, man, they put them badges and uniforms on and they think they own the world.
You're talking to the woman who chaired the Frank Little meeting. What is this Frank Little? What is this all about?
Frank Little is a caucus within the Peace and Freedom Party. Frank Little was a wobbly who was lynched by the copper corporations back in like 1907, I believe. 1913, I'm not sure. He was just really, really exemplary in terms of his like behavior of always standing up for people. People knew they could always count on Frank Little to come and support them. So anyways, the Peace and Freedom Party, which has many, many different people's beliefs, socialists and feminists in theory, I suppose, but you don't have to be a socialist to be in it, you don't have to be a feminist to be in it, but the Frank Little Caucus is a group of people who are committed to actually being really active out in the streets and making change, and who believe they want to revitalize the Peace and Freedom Party in a certain sense, but the Peace and Freedom Party has a lot of older people in it, and that they just need some new lifeblood, and you can see Frank Little Club people from the Bay, and a lot of them are just now. It's really impressive. It's really positive.
Freedom recently lost its status as a registered party. Not enough people registered.
It did, and right now the Peace and Freedom is doing a huge voter registration campaign in order to get back on the ballot, because they don't have, like they said, they don't have the numbers they need. I believe it is about